Technology.ie. It's Thursday, July 24th, 2014.
Technology.ie is brought to you by Ireland's premier hosting and domain registration company, Black Knight. Black Knight offer a comprehensive range of hosting and domain solutions for businesses of all shapes and sizes, no matter where they are in the world.
Keith Walter Overstock, this is Conor Mwinacoin in the Black Knight studio, and I'm joined on Skype by Franz Struwig. Is that correct, Franz?
That's good enough, Con.
Okay, welcome to the show. Franz, you're the CEO of iKubu. You're based in South Africa, but I'm talking to you today in Boston, where you are on business in the United States. And I want to talk to you in particular, Franz, about a particular product that you guys are developing at the moment called the Backtracker. Can you tell me what that is?
Thanks, Con. Yeah, so Backtracker is a small radar-powered device that gives cyclists a sixth sense. Maybe if I can just give you some background on the problem we're solving there. You know, as cyclists, we all have this huge fear of being hit from behind. And, you know, the stats back it up. It's the biggest reason for death on the road for cyclists. And, you know, we are just very vulnerable. So what we've tried to do with Backtracker was to use radar technology to increase the awareness of cyclists. So by detecting cars at 150 meters behind you and tracking those cars, you know, we can display that for the cyclist on his handlebars. So really increase your awareness of what's going on behind you. And at the same time, have an intelligent backlight system that communicates with a motorist.
Okay. I was looking at your website, Franz, and it said that there, one of the things that prompted this idea was a conversation with an elderly cyclist who revealed that he had taken to cycling in the face of oncoming traffic, rather than cycle on the same side as the traffic, which he felt was more dangerous because he had no perception and no awareness of cars that were coming up behind him and couldn't tell for sure if they could see him or not.
Yeah, that's I think a very common issue. You know, we were cycling in Stellenbosch, South Africa, where we live, and we just met this elderly gentleman, and you know, as he was telling us about his fear of being hit from behind, we just realized that we all actually secretly share that fear. Mm. And, you know, you've got your rearview mirrors, you're a defensive driver, you listen carefully, but every now and then you still just miss a car. And it is really dangerous. So, you know, at that stage, we were doing a lot of innovation in the computer vision and radar space. So it just sort of came naturally for us to apply our radar know-how to this problem.
Which is cool because, you know, it's an engineering problem, I suppose. You've got a solution for it. Tell me in detail how it works.
Okay, I won't go into the technical detail, but
sure.
from a user perspective, you've got a little device that you clip onto your seat post. Mm-hmm. Probably half the size of an iPhone, and then you've got another small device that goes on your handlebar. Now, the device that's on your handlebar provides information to the cyclist. So it has an array of LEDs, and each LED represents about 10 meters. So if you pick up a car at 150 meters, the bottom LED will light up, and you can see that LED progressing forward. And it will, you know, can pick up multiple cars. So you can have three or four LEDs that are lit up moving towards the front. And, you know, so as a cyclist, you know, that just gives you extra information.
You can see at a glance without turning around the position and how many cars are coming behind you.
Absolutely. Okay. So it's, you know, it's not really a warning. Mm. It's just about enhancing perception.
Yeah.
So if conditions are a bit dangerous, you'll respond differently to maybe if you're in a cycle lane. Hmm.
But that's not all it does, Franz, because it also signals the oncoming motorist. How does that work?
Yes, you're right. That's only half the story. Since we've got this information about cars approaching, we decided that we'd like to also include an intelligent backlight. Mm. So what you have normally is your backlights are running at a constant brightness. And so if it's really bright, then the battery won't last very long. And or you'll have to have a very big battery pack. And also, I think motorists are sort of immune to backlights these days. They tend to be texting while driving, so they're not so aware of a normal blinking backlight. So what we did was to say, let's save battery life if there are no cars, and we just have a normal backlight. And the moment we pick up a car, we really go crazy and increase the intensity of the light significantly, and then also increase the pulse rate as the car comes closer. So from a motorist's perspective, you really get a sense of distance closing.
Yeah.
It's really it's grabbing it's, the attention.
It's a bit like the speed detection signs which pick up your speed and display it back to you as well. Does that have an impact on motorists, do you think? Is that kind of feedback useful in terms of getting them to be aware of their surroundings?
Yeah, to be honest, we haven't been able to test that with a large population of motorists. You know, we've tested that internally, and we feel it's a significant improvement on what's out there. You know, one of the things we tried to do really well was to shape the beam so that it doesn't blind cyclists, but that it picks up a motorist at 150 meters. And it does that very well, where I think a lot of backlights tend to disperse the energy too much. So the cyclist directly behind you is almost falls off his bike if the light goes on. And, just as everybody sees the light, but the car at 150 meters probably doesn't. So we definitely know that is working. I think from a academic perspective, you know, we'll have to do a bit of a study to see if it really has an impact on motorist behavior.
Can you tell me a bit about the history of the development of this product, Franz? When did you get started? What kind of developments have you made along the way?
Yeah, Con, it's product development is such a journey. In our company, in Kubu, we do a lot of computer vision and radar products, and we use improvisation, theater improv, to actually stimulate creativity and then to get the juices going. So we're always in this mode of looking for problems and trying to come up with cool solutions. And, with Backtracker, I think, as I mentioned the story of seeing the old man next to the road, we just jumped into it immediately. And a month later, we had a prototype, and it was a big, clunky thing. And we just wanted to get market feedback as soon as possible. So strapped this onto a few bicycles, and the first feedback we got was, you know, it's awesome, but it needs to be way smaller and it needs to be very pretty. So we went a second round, made a bit of a smaller unit, made a proper enclosure, and we got the same feedback. It needs to be even smaller and it needs to be, very lightweight. And so cyclists also care about aesthetics quite a bit. So what we have now is our third iteration, basically incorporating all of that feedback, doing something that it's really small, compact, lightweight. Our initial user interface was just a single LED that just flickered as cars came closer. So you just got as the car came closer, the flicker rate increased. And that was quite intuitive, but when there were multiple cars, that interface didn't work so well. So we revolutionized the interface with our latest version to have like an whole array of LEDs. It's a journey. There's so much learning along the way. I think one of the biggest things we've been grappling with is the market. Mm-hmm. So taking a product from zero to one, you know, is quite easy. That we can do that. But scaling a product, so taking it from one to N, is really where the challenge lies. And so we've been looking at OEM to get another company to rebrand our product. And we found that nobody really will ever put in the same amount of passion into taking our product to market as we ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that's why we finally decided on the crowdfunding route, to really test the market and get it out there.
I'm going to ask you about that in a minute, Franz, but I want to come back to something you mentioned just there. The use of theatrical improvisation as a product development tool. I have never heard about that before, and I'm absolutely intrigued. Tell me a little bit more about that. I'm imagining, I don't know what to imagine, really. It's kind of role play and things like that, is it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
So
how does that work?
So what you get is, you know, if in an engineering environment where, let's say you're developing a lot of software and electronics, you know, people get into a sort of almost robotic mode, you know, where you're sitting behind your desk and looking at your computer all day. And it's when you have some time allocated for looking at solving difficult problems, coming up with out-of-the-box solutions, you need to get people from that sort of robotic mode into a more creative space. And we use improv to achieve that. So it's about helping people to get in touch with their sort of inner child almost. But it's also about setting up the ground rules as to how we do brainstorming and how we do innovation. So to give you a practical example, we would stand in a circle. We would play a few games before we start to brainstorm, and these games reinforce improv principles. So we stand in a circle and then we do something like each person steps forward and bows with a great pizzazz, saying, "I failed," and everybody would cheer and clap hands, and you know that reinforces that. Really, there isn't a failure. You know, nothing you can say is wrong in that space. It's a safe space. And then initially it feels silly we're doing these things, but people really start to participate. Then we've got this game called Malapropism, where we walk through the office and intuitively anything you see, you give a new name. And the crazier the better. You know, so you'll pick up a stapler and you'll say, "Look at this beautiful apple," and you know, people start to appreciate the intuitiveness and the creativity that people are expressing there.
What you're saying sounds much bigger than what I'm about to say, but it's to use a cliche, it's a way of getting people to think outside the box and be creative.
I think that is a good summary.
Very good. So how does that play out in practice, say, when in relation to this particular product?
So I think for this product, that had a significant impact in our mentality during the initial phases of firstly coming up with, you know, seeing the problem and coming up with the solution. You know, if you create a culture where you're constantly encouraging people to think different, to look at problems differently, to be intuitive, you know, then you just stumble upon these things. So it's it didn't come out in an improv session, but there was a lot of foundational work before that.
I imagine it encourages a certain amount of abstraction when it comes to problems, to sort of cutting away, you know, to translating them into unfamiliar environments, maybe, and seeing the essence of them.
Yeah.
Of problems. No, it sounds very interesting indeed. Probably difficult to explain over Skype, or Skype audio at the very least. We might have to get you to demonstrate this in video at some point. But let's move back to Backtracker, which I think is a very a very practical solution to a very real problem, the issue of safety for cyclists on roads. So many people now are posting GoPro video of horrific cyclist accidents. I saw one this morning of a guy in England who miraculously survived being thrown over the bonnet of a car that cut across him and actually managed to land on his feet afterwards, even though his bike was completely destroyed. But these things are not surprising. They're quite commonplace, and cyclists either have their own experience or know other people's stories as well. So what you're doing really here is a very practical approach to tackling what is without a doubt a very real problem. Tell me about the response you've got from the public to it, and in particular about your crowdfunding campaign, please.
Yeah, we've had an incredible response. You know, we're not used to being in the public domain, consumer domain, and it's just been phenomenal. We've taken to social media, and we've had some great press, so TechCrunch and Gizmodo, and also on the BBC now, and some fantastic radio shows. The public have really engaged with us, so they've given us a lot of feedback on features that they want in future. We've had a lot of people across the world wanting to be involved in distribution and giving advice. Also, a lot of inbound interest from people wanting to invest. So it's been a very positive experience, this whole crowdfunding thing.
So how is it working in practice at the moment? You're inviting people what, to order units for themselves, or what are the options for people who want to get involved? Mm-hmm.
Okay, so how crowdfunding works now is you get to order a unit, pre-order a unit, and if we reach our target, then that money goes off your credit card, and 3 or 4 months later, the unit gets delivered. So we need funds basically to do the tooling for our enclosures, to do certification, and to build automated test equipment. So I think for your listeners, you know, there are a few options available. There's currently a $179 deal. That's really great value for this military grade radar. But then we also have a few deals for, you know, if you want to get 2 units or 3 units, or there's even a distributor option of 50 units. But the people that are interested can look at crowd.backtracker.io.
Excellent. And how's that? How are you going on target now? When did you launch the campaign?
We launched about probably 3 weeks ago.
Okay.
And in that region, and I must say it hasn't been easy. Mm. You know, it really focuses the mind the moment that you put yourself out there on a crowdfunding campaign.
Yeah.
You have no idea what to expect, and you know, we are now in sales mode and trying to understand what messaging works for people and how to really communicate the benefits of a product, which is really a new category. Mm. So it's, you know, we're finding the it's difficult for people to fully grasp the benefits of this. Mm. But we're learning, and we're on around 25% of our campaign now. So we're quite bullish that we're going to accelerate it and reach our target.
And you've got 30 days left to do that, so it's plenty of time indeed to achieve that. Well, Franz, I want to wish you well with it and say thanks to you for talking to me. And again, people can find out more at your website. What is that again?
That's crowd.backtracker.io.
The very best of luck with it, and thanks for talking to us.
Thank you, Conor.